The following program is sponsored by Friends of Life Outreach International.
My commitment is not to a political party. My commitment is to Jesus Christ.
Next on Life Today, former Governor Mike Huckabee.
If a Christian votes his pocketbook rather than his godly principles, he ought not to vote or call himself a Christian voter. At that point, he's being a voter based on his own personal greed, not the national need.
More conversation and less confrontation. Next.
It's always a thrill to come and share life today with you. We're excited about all of our guests. Sometimes I guess I get a little bit hyped up because I'm so excited about watching someone's journey. I'm James Robinson. Betty and I are thrilled to have Governor Mike Huckabee back with us. Many of you may know that he actually started here, you might say, in his visibility role in media and television and in traveling and being before a tremendous number of people. You may not know this, but I think it's very, very important. He probably helped organize and orchestrate and bring together a meeting that really did change the course of history. He helped organize, and this was something God put on my heart, and really it wasn't difficult for him to see the importance of it or another person see the importance of it. And frankly, it started in the heart of Billy Graham and Bill Bright, Charles Stanley, Adrian Rogers, and a few men of prayer. And it concerned the future of America and the Soviet threat and some bad decisions that we were making that were not based upon sound principles. And we found someone that we thought we should at least hear, and we wanted people of faith to hear him. So Mike Huckabee, working for me, helped organize the National Affairs Briefing that filled for the first time to overflowing the Reunion Arena in Dallas. Governor Huckabee put that together under the guidance and oversight of those of us who were praying. He did a great job. Mr. Reagan spoke. He made that famous statement to the Christians and the leaders of churches. So I know you can't endorse me, but I want you to know I endorse you. Well, that made headlines nationwide. What he was saying, because he talked to me a long time the next day, he said, the principles and concerns of those people I totally embrace and endorse. And sure enough, he became a great leader. Would you like to join me saying thanks to Governor Mike Huckabee for his continuing leadership in our country?
Thank you,
Governor. Those were great days, weren't they?
They were great days. And one of the powerful moments from that statement that President Reagan made, then candidate Reagan, was because at that time, Christians had been somewhat marginalized, put outside the realm of influence, particularly evangelical Christians. Sort of thought of as, well, they're operating down in the storefronts, and they're not well-educated, and they don't really have any role to play in our culture. And we were looked upon contemptuously by so many people in our culture. And when a leading presidential candidate looked out there and said, I endorse you, it validated people who needed to be upheld as a part of the American community and having a voice that was important. It was an amazing moment, far bigger than I think anybody recognized at the moment. And it was the launch of Christians becoming active and involved in political affairs in America.
And you know, I was, I guess credited, you might say, of being one of the leaders of what ultimately became referred to in the media by, I guess, mainly critics or just observers as the religious right. And I saw something happening that concerned me deeply. You know, we talked about it in Indivisible quite thoroughly. I really kind of laid it out so everyone would understand. I actually saw something that I did not think was healthy. I did not even think it was exactly what would be pleasing to the Lord or fulfill His purpose or His commission to us as believers. I saw it appear that the church or evangelicals or Christians or, quote, the religious right was becoming an arm of a political party or an appendage of it. In my understanding of Scripture and the commission of Christ and biblical principles and biblical standards is that if we're light and salt, we preserve the precious, we affect everything in the culture, and we light and illuminate the way and reveal the error and the danger. And that's what we do as Christians. And that means that we have an impact on all parties, on all people, on all candidates, and of course on all voters. And so when I saw that, I became a little bit more reclusive in the sense that I was behind the scenes more. And I think that was a wise decision on my part. What has happened since then, however, has been the removing of the action on the part of the people of faith. And I'm seeing a tremendous number of Protestants and Catholics who don't even register to vote. When they register to vote, then they don't vote. When they do vote, they seem to vote from an unprincipled, uninformed perspective. I'd like your take on that.
Well, first of all, you often hear people say that voters vote their pocketbook. If a Christian votes his pocketbook rather than his godly principles, he ought not to vote or call himself a Christian voter, because at that point he's being a voter based on his own personal greed, not the national need. And there's nothing wrong with having an interest in tax policy and financial issues. Those are all important. But when a Christian votes, the primary objective ought to be, what does God want to do in this country? And what is God trying to say to us as a people? And what are the issues that transcend whether I'm prosperous or not? Because God can use people who are broke, and He can use people who have great wealth. And it's not how much we have, it's how did we obtain it and what are we doing with it. Those are the biblical criteria for people having something. But it bothers me when I hear Christians say, well, what I really care about is, you know, my own economic condition. We ought to care about the economic condition of our brothers and sisters, some of whom are struggling to pay just for enough to fill their gas tanks or to put food on the table. We need to be concerned about the fact that we have created a disposable generation where we devalue human life to the level that we think it's okay for someone to be deemed expendable, disposable, not having worth and value that should be protected and preserved. Those are issues that ought to drive the Christian vote.
Well, you actually inspired this incredible documentary, The Gift of Life. He's the commentator, he's the voiceover, as well as inspiration for the group, Citizens United, that put this together. Powerful piece. And we've actually been offering this to our viewers and asking them to show it in their churches, Governor, because it shows the preciousness of life. I think that Roe versus Wade was an awful decision.
Yes.
It was an assault on life itself. Right to life is the first right from which all other rights come. And when you deny that right, or talk about someone's personal right in privacy, what they do, or with their body as it affects somebody else's body, it becomes everyone's concern. And the preciousness of life, in my opinion, and understanding that, is the only way we're going to overcome this, what I believe is a horrific practice of terminating lives for whatever reason. And if we don't change that, I really believe that we have set the course for economic collapse, relationships collapse, the value of all life diminishing. I think this is one of the supreme issues of the day. And the only way we'll correct it, not just change Roe versus Wade, but change the hearts so that we value life. Would you agree with that?
If I don't value you as a human being, I'm not going to value physical things. I'm not going to value money. I'm not going to value an education. I'm not going to value decent streets. Everything else goes with that. The Gift of Life takes a very different approach to the issue of the sanctity of life, and I think it's been amazingly powerful to change people's perspective. Your story is at the heart of the Gift of Life, and every time I've been in the screening where people have seen it, two things happen. They laugh uncontrollably at some of the things you talk about when Brother Hale, who adopted you, I won't spoil it for the people, but it's a powerful moment. And then seconds later, they're bawling their eyes out when they realize how your life was spared. And when I see you and I watch the show and I see what you're doing to change the lives of children in Africa and give them hope and life and food, and I see tens of thousands of people coming to Christ, I ask myself, would the world have been better off had your mother, who attempted to abort you, what if she'd been successful? It's not just your life that would have been impacted. Frankly, my life would have been impacted. My son, who is named David James Huckabee after you, my grandson, Chandler James Huckabee, named after you, the impact is far greater than the one life. the millions of lives that are touched around the world, that all would have been affected had your mother been able to be successful. So the question this film asks is, what if the people whose mothers attempted or contemplated an abortion had been successful? What would have happened? And we just let these people tell their stories, and I'm telling you, you don't have to beat people over the head or grab them by the lapels. The message is there. When Governor Rick Perry of Texas saw this film in Iowa when we first premiered it, he had, prior to that, been pro-life, but had exceptions for rape and incest until he heard the powerful story in this film of Rebecca Kiesling. And after he heard her story, the next day he publicly announced that he no longer was creating or allowing and believing in exceptions, because he understood that even a life that may have been created in an unholy way still had a holy purpose because God had allowed it to be created. It was stunning. It was a very amazing moment to see someone in a nationally prominent moment make such a statement. It was a God thing. There's no other way to describe it.
How important do you think it is for people who profess faith to be involved in an intelligent way and in an active way in the political processes in choosing the leaders who will determine the policies and the direction and ultimately even the laws that we have to either endure or be blessed by?
It changes America, quite frankly. For example, in most elections, only 50% of evangelical believers even register to vote, and of the 50% who register, only 50% typically vote. And when that number is below 50%, liberals will take seats that had been conservative. You know, I don't think Christians ought to ever put their faith in any political party. I'm active in a political party, but if that political party were to abandon the principles of life and the principles that I think are important and to deviate from those, you know, my commitment is not to a political party. My commitment is to Jesus Christ. And I don't think any political party perfectly represents Him. So I want to speak to the party, not let the party speak for me when it comes to matters of faith. And I think Christians have to be very bold and say, here's the criteria. It's not trying to get a candidate to agree to just say some things, but to say, here's what's important to me. Christians need to not just be voters, but inform voters. And don't believe, you know, one of the things I would love to say to every American, the least credible information you will ever have about someone running for office is the information you get from his or her opponents. Just remember, that is not good information. So if you say, well, I saw that ad that James Robison put out on Mike Huckabee, dismiss it. Dismiss it. It's rat poison. It's rat poison, I'm telling
Bad
you.
Bad example. Because I'd be saying good things.
Well,
but
if we were
opponents, then you don't trust the other opponents.
You're not going to say about me, if you're my opponent in the political race, that Mike Huckabee's a nice guy. He's got such integrity. You know, he's made some tough decisions, but I have to agree that most of them are right. You're going to take one thing I've said or done, you're going to amplify it, turn it up to 11 on a scale of 10, and tell everybody that I'm just about somewhat of a combination of maybe Jeffrey Dahmer and Bernie Madoff, and that electing me would be disastrous for the world. So don't take that information as part of the process. Get it independently. Become your own editor. Carefully weigh and sift through whatever you hear
Absolutely.
About someone running.
I believe that 1980 was a critically important election for the whole world.
It was.
What happened in the United States affected the whole world. We made a wise decision, made a wise choice, and people of faith had a whole lot to do with it. And by the way, a Hollywood actor replaced a Sunday school teacher in our denomination.
Yeah.
So you see, just because somebody has a good profession of faith and are good Christians does not necessarily make them the best qualified to lead at a particular moment or in a particular role. You really need to keep that in mind. Again, that's why we wrote the book Indivisible, so you can look and see what are the real issues that we face and that matter. That's why you wrote the book A Simple Government, because we could have a very simple government. When you look at this year's election, in light of where things are, how important is this election this year?
We always say every election is the most important. This one has great importance for a couple of reasons. We are now at a national crossroads as a nation as to whether or not we're going to carry out the American way of life largely believing that government will make decisions for me, or whether we will return to the basic concept that every individual has both liberty and the responsibility of liberty. It's really that fundamental. And I think sometimes people get wrapped up in, do you believe in a 35 or a 39% tax? Forget all that noise. What we need to ask is, does this person basically believe in the fundamental right of the individual as accountable before God and also responsible for one's liberty, or do we believe that we need to depend more on government to make those decisions for us? That's the big issue that has to be decided in this election.
We've got to decide whether we want a government in control, all provident, upon which people are taught to depend, or whether we want government of the people that is under the control of people who are personally responsible and who are living with the freedom and liberty that our founders have offered us really in the founding documents.
And
we've got to make that decision this year.
Well, and government is supposed to be our servant. We're not to be government's servant. And we've really come to the place where that's the decision. Do we believe we elect people to serve us, or do we elect them so that we can serve them? Here's a fascinating figure. When a person leaves Congress, the average member of Congress who leaves Congress becomes a lobbyist, and his income goes up by 1,472%, 14 times what he made in Congress. The problem is, people go to Congress, they stay there forever. We don't get them in and get them out and make them go home. And it's like the Roach Motel. They get in, but we can't get rid of them.
That's right.
And once we even, if we vote them out, they don't go home and say, gee, I'm sorry the way I voted. No, they stay in Washington and become lobbyists and become multimillionaires lobbying the very people they used to work with. It's just outrageous. So that's what has to change.
And that's a kind of a little summation I'd just like to replay just again, because it's so true. And all of this can be changed. I really believe we're going to begin to correct the course. Your book, Simple Government, will help. Indivisible will help. You agree this can help?
Absolutely.
As a pastor, would you want your congregation, when you were pastor, to read something like Indivisible and believe
in the book? Well, I think especially during an election year, as people are talking about the role of believers in the political process, this is a book that doesn't tell them how to vote. It doesn't have an application form to join the Republican Party or the Democratic Party or to support a particular candidate. It outlines the big picture, the things that matter to America, not just to believers, but to every American, and then lets the reader make the decision. And they'll come to the right conclusion because the facts are presented in a very compelling way.
And I agree 100%. And this would be great for pastors to show in your churches. You can get it. There's a website where you can get it. And, you know, as a matter of fact, I'll be honest with you, if you'll just help us save lives over in Africa and you ask for it, we'll find out some way to pay for it and send it to you, because I want you to have it. Indivisible is being sent to those of you, Mike, who will do what you just referenced a while ago, and that's help rescue people who are literally perishing in the hard-hit areas of Africa, including South Sudan. Would you say thanks to Governor Huckabee for his stand, for his convictions? Thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you for your friendship, but more than any, thank you for your leadership. And I could not be more pleased to have someone standing up in front of our nation and giving the kind of counsel and advice that you've given here on our program, but that you give on your radio program every day, 3 hours a day now, and on your Fox program and on your commentary. Again, let's say thanks to Governor.
Thank you very much.
Governor Huckabee referenced something a moment ago that he had appreciation for, and that is the fact that we're able to help literally save lives with the feeding programs. I want you to just listen very closely to the story of a mother, and there's so many that she's representing that we can help. Listen closely, please. This woman is in South Sudan.
The people of Sudan endured decades of turmoil and suffering during their civil war. Armed marauders from the north would often raid villages in the predominantly Christian southern regions to steal their land, as well as establish tribal and Muslim dominance.
Mm-hmm.
Now that South Sudan is independent, thousands of exiles are returning to their homeland. Equipped with their faith in God, a glimmer of hope, and the clothes on their backs, the villagers are eager to start over, but are currently living in meager temporary camps with very little food.
Would you take that mother and that little child? She said, I don't know how. We're going to survive. I can tell you how. Would you help her? Now think about it. I was so amazed when the missionaries told me years ago, now more than 20 years ago, did you know that for $30, we can feed 3 children for 6 months. 50 we can feed 5, and 100 we can feed 10. Well, now it's not quite that expansive in its effect. It's $30 for 3 months. $50 for 3 months, 5 children. $100, 10 children for 3 months. And Betty and I and others, we keep working to try to keep getting the months together. And we keep trusting God and asking you. Right now, we really face a very serious challenge, and that is we've got 20,000 starving, desperate children right there. Many of them are Christians. They were driven out. South Sudan now has separated from the radical Muslim nation of Sudan. And it's South Sudan. It's primarily Christian. And I'm talking about dedicated Christians. Like Franklin Graham, Billy Graham's son, said, he said, James, you're going to see Christians in the Sudan that are just like the ones in the book of Acts. He said, you got to go with me there. And we did. Years ago, we went with him. And we saw it. And we've never left. And our missionaries have never left. And they keep going into the hardest hit regions. But right now, we've got some real situations that are increasing. And that's why George Clooney went over and talked about it. It's serious. A whole lot worse than what you saw where he was, where our workers are. I mean, it's devastating, but it's a very concern, rightful concern that he expressed. Would you dial the telephone number? And would you say, I'll answer that mother's heart cry? I can take care of 10 of those desperate children. Hundreds of thousands that you're helping all over Africa in needy areas. We're going to help you, James. We're going to help you take care of that additional 20,000 in South Sudan. Would you dial the number? Take your bank card, use it like a check. If you want to write a check, make it to Life. Make the largest gift you can. Don't think, if I only help 3, that's too few. No, $30 is huge. It saves those lives. It answers that mother's prayer for her situation. But if you could help us take care of 100 and make a $1,000 gift, or several thousand, I believe you'll do it. I believe you want to do it, so I want to thank you for it. Please make that call. If you want to go online, lifetoday.org, you can do that. We're going to send you some special gifts to bless you, your children, your grandchildren, to bless you in your Bible study. We'll gladly send the book that's impacting so many lives right now and could correct our nation's course, Indivisible, to say thank you for helping us save those lives. Thank you for your gift. Thank you for making that call.
At this very moment, a child is drawing his last breath, struggling to stay alive due to a lack of food. Sadly, this impoverished child is not alone, and without our help, many like him face death as well. Today, you can make a difference and help save a life. In addition to the 400,000 children already in Life's Mission Feeding Program, our teams have found a region in South Sudan with another 20,000 children in need of immediate life-saving assistance. Our mission teams are in place, but we desperately need your help to replenish critically needed food supplies immediately. Your life-saving gift of $30, $50, or $100 will help feed and care for 3, 5, or 10 children for 3 full months. With your gift, we'll rush you the Jesus Storybook Bible. This beautifully illustrated book will help your children discover for themselves that Jesus is at the center of God's great story of salvation and at the center of their lives, too. With your gift of $100 or more to help feed 10 children, you may request our new international version and new King James side-by-side Bible with a two-column format for easy comparison. Finally, please prayerfully consider a gift of $1,000 or more to help feed and save the lives of 100 children. And you may also request the Lion and the Lamb bronze sculpture. Please call, write, or make your gift online right now.
Well, Betty and I want to say thank you so much for helping. Thank you. Every gift is so important. Indivisible will be sent to you. I really hope you'll encourage your friends to get a copy and to really focus our prayers and our attention so that we can come from the verse of Scripture, my people perish for lack of knowledge. Governor Huckabee said, if you grasp the truth here, that verse will no longer apply. You're not going to perish for lack of knowledge. You're going to have the knowledge of the truth we need today. So we'll be sending it to you. Encourage others to get it. Again, thanks to Governor Huckabee.
Thank you, Jay.
God bless you, buddy.
Thank all of you. You're a great audience. Thank you so much. We really appreciate getting to share this time with you.
God began to undo my view of him and bust it up.
Next week, Bible teacher Jenny Allen. Life Today is made possible by the supporters of Life Outreach International. Your gift will be used exclusively for the exempt purposes of Life. The ministry features specific outreaches as examples of the programs it supports and conducts. Gifts are considered to be without restriction as to use unless explicitly stipulated by the donor. The ministry is a member of the ECFA.